Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast, live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Have you ever felt uninvited? And maybe being uninvited made you feel unwanted, undesirable. When I was in first grade, I was pretty popular, no surprise. But I was not the most popular boy in my first grade class. His name was Tommy Gardner. Gasp of shock erupt through the room. You can't believe it, but it's true. Tommy Gardner was more popular than me. Why the girls liked Tommy Gardner better, I will never be able to understand. Perhaps they thought that Tommy Gardner could supply them with vegetables and flowers. Tommy Gardner, I don't know. But he was, and there was this girl in our class named Amy, and in the middle of first grade came Amy's birthday, and she had a sleepover birthday party, and she invited every girl in the class and Tommy Gardner. He came over to me, he said, "Hey, are you invited to Amy's birthday party?" I said, "No, are you invited to Amy's birthday party?" And he said, "Yes." Again, the crowd can't believe it, gasps of shock and horror. Now, at this point in the story, you have to ask some questions, right? Like, what kind of first grade girl invites a boy to her sleepover party? I don't know, but it does make you wonder about her character and moral purity. But she did invite him. And Tommy accepted the invitation, which makes you wonder what kind of boy would want to go to a girl's sleepover party. I don't know, but I wanted to go too. But I couldn't because I was uninvited. Today, we're starting this new series called God for the Rest of Us. You know, so many people have come to a point in their life where they believe that if there is a God, and if he is offering relationship, if he does bring some people to heaven when they die, well, that certainly wouldn't be for someone like me. Perhaps you've gotten to a point where you believe that God's thoughts about you are kind of, in the words of Alanis Morissette, but you are not allowed. You're uninvited. And maybe you feel that way because perhaps at some point in your life you kind of left God behind. Maybe repeatedly you've turned away from God, or maybe it's because of the things that you have done. Perhaps you just feel like you don't meet the moral standard that must be required to gain the approval of a perfect God. Well, if you feel that way, I've got really good news for you. About 2,000 years ago, a man named Jesus walked the face of the earth, and this Jesus claimed that he was God. And people didn't know whether to accept that or not. Is he really God? But the one thing they did believe was that if he was God, he would be for the Pharisees. The Pharisees were the religious leaders of the time, the religious rulers. And what they taught everyone was that God was for them. They were the ones who were approved of by God. And they taught everyone that God only approves of people who are sinless. And they taught people that they were indeed sinless. Now, they weren't sinless, but they liked to say that they were, and they liked to act like they were. And so they told everyone that if you want God to approve of you, if you want God to be for you, well, then you have to follow the rules. You have to follow the religious traditions. You have to follow the ritualistic ordinances for purity. And you need to keep yourself separate from anyone who is impure or sinful. And it very quickly became obvious that there was a problem, because Jesus, who claimed to be God, hung out with prostitutes. Now, there were never any accusations of impropriety. Jesus was never alone with prostitutes, but he was friends with prostitutes. He wanted to hang out with them, and they wanted to hang out with him. And if the Pharisees' approach to God was correct, well, then this should have been something that Jesus was kind of ashamed of and had to hide so no one would find out about it. But Jesus didn't hide it. In fact, he would occasionally kind of flaunt it and almost shove it in the Pharisees' face. Like, there's this one time where Jesus is telling a story to the Pharisees, and he concludes his story in verse 31 of Matthew 21, we'll put it on the screen, by saying, "Which of the two did what his father wanted? The first," they answered, that's the Pharisees. And then check this out. Jesus said to them, "I tell you the truth, the tax collectors and the prostitutes are entering the kingdom of God ahead of you." And so some people start to think, wow, Jesus is a friend of prostitutes. And so I guess Jesus is not God, right? Because we know from the Pharisees that God is not for the prostitutes. The Pharisees have taught us that explicitly. And so this situation is kind of boiling for a while, and it comes to a head one night at a dinner party. There's this Pharisee named Simon, and he has this dinner party, and he invites his normal friends, but there's a little bit of a difference this time. We're going to look at the story in the book of Luke, and if you have a Bible, you can turn to the book of Luke. If you don't have a Bible with you, that's no problem. We'll put the verses on the screen. But if you don't own a Bible, we'd love to give you one. There's no catch, no cost. We've got a bunch of them back at the Velcro Bar, which is our connecting place. And so just grab a Bible on your way out if you'd like one. So Luke chapter 7, the story starts in verse 36. It says, "Now one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. So he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table." So we're going to see that this is a dinner party with a bunch of Pharisees and Jesus, okay? And they all kind of gather around. Now, what we know about the Pharisees is that what would have happened before this meal is that they all would have went through this ritualistic cleansing, kind of washing themselves with sort of like holy water kind of a thing. And the idea was that they had been out in the world that day, and so perhaps their sinlessness, their purity had been stained by someone they had interacted with. So before eating, they had to make sure that they were clean. Okay, so that would have already happened, and they all sit down to eat. Now, as you read this story, don't imagine a dinner party you might go to today, because this was different. Back then, this type of dinner party would involve hours of conversation and debate about issues like theology and social trends and politics. And what would happen is they would have this dinner party in the outer room of the house, and just outside the outer room was a porch. And they would keep the door of the house between the porch and the outer room open because people from the town would actually come, and they would all sit and gather on the porch, and they would listen in on the dinner conversation. See, back then they didn't have radio, internet, TV, so they weren't home watching The Real Housewives of Jerusalem. And so this was their entertainment. They would come and they would listen to these guys debate theology. And so typically the crowd out there would be people who align themselves with the Pharisees. Okay, it's a dinner of Pharisees. They're going to talk about Pharisee kind of things. And we like the Pharisees. And so we come and we listen in on them. We're the fans of the Pharisees. But this night has something different about it, because Jesus was invited. And so he's sitting at the table. And though Jesus, like the Pharisees, also claimed to represent God, Jesus had a very different sort of fan base. Garth Brooks might say that Jesus had friends in low places. In fact, one of the ways the Pharisees tried to put Jesus down is they would say, "Jesus, he's a friend of sinners." But Jesus never took it as an insult. He would kind of smile and say, "Yeah, that's why I came. I came for people who are far from God, for people who have maybe made some bad decisions. Maybe they've messed up their lives. Maybe they're kind of broken. Maybe they need healing." And he would tell those people who are far from God, that God was for them. And so out on the porch this night, we've got the typical crowd of Pharisee fans who are there to hear the Pharisees, but we also have Jesus fan base, who are a bunch of sinful people who are attracted to this guy who claims to represent God and says God is for you as well. God's for the rest of us. And so let's keep reading what happens next in the story. Verse 37, "When a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume." So we'll pause there. It says, a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town. Historians from the time tell us that that was code for she was the town prostitute. that they wouldn't use those words, but saying a woman who had lived a sinful life, they're just saying, hey, she's the town prostitute. And she was uninvited. Not only to this dinner party, but everywhere she went because of her lack of character and moral purity, because she was the kind of girl who invited boys over for sleepovers. So the town, thanks. So the town prostitute learned that Jesus was at this dinner party at the Pharisee's house, and she shows up uninvited. She made her way across town, and she walks up onto the crowded porch, and you can just imagine when everyone looks up and sees who's walking through them, the shockwaves, the thoughts of, what is she doing here? But she doesn't care. She just marches right through the open door and into the dinner party. The moment she walks into that room, what's happening in the eyes of the Pharisees is that she just ruined the ritual purity for the night. They had all cleansed themselves so that any tainting from people like this out in the world, but now she's brought it into their room, and so she's just ruined the entire night. And she knows that. She wouldn't have been surprised to learn that they were thinking that. And she knows how they think about her. But she couldn't help herself. She had to be there. She couldn't help it. And so let's see what happens next. Verse 38. And as she stood behind him, that's Jesus, at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. So she walks in the room, and she's carrying the most precious thing she owned. For a woman back then, your most valuable possession, if you were lucky, was an alabaster jar of perfume. An alabaster jar was a jar with a long neck, no handles, and to use it, you had to break the neck off the bottle. This was not your daily perfume. This was more like your savings account. This is what you counted on in life. This is what you could fall back on if you had to. It was your most valuable possession. It had always been her treasure, but something had changed. Jesus was now her treasure. And to show them him that, she walks up, takes this jar, breaks the neck off, and pours the contents onto Jesus' feet, realizing that Jesus' feet are now wet, not only from the perfume, but also from the tears, that she can't seem to stop crying. She wants to dry Jesus' feet, but she doesn't have a towel, and so she lets down her hair. Now, in their culture at this time, women never unbound their hair in front of any man except for their husband. It was actually scandalous. It was almost considered pornographic to let down your hair in front of any man except your husband, but she doesn't care. She doesn't care what anyone's thinking about this. Her focus is only on Jesus. And in this moment, as she's laying there, you know, crying and pouring perfume on his feet and wiping her feet with her let down hair, everyone's focus is now on Jesus, right? Everyone's wondering, what is he going to do with this? What is he going to do? This man who claims to be God, what is he going to do in this moment? In fact, we're told in this story what the Pharisee who threw the party, what he's thinking. So verse 39, when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. So this Pharisee assumed that Jesus didn't realize that this woman was a prostitute, thus he must not be God, as he claimed, or even a prophet who represents God, because even a prophet would be able to figure out who this woman was. And the Pharisees thought and taught that, you know, sinless people, good people, don't hang around the bad people, the sinful people. They certainly never allow themselves to be touched by them. And so if Jesus was really one of us, if he represented God, he would not allow this to be happening. And so this Pharisee is thinking, you're not who you claim to be, are you? And I love how Jesus responds. I love it because this Pharisee is thinking, you think you know people, but you don't know people the way you should know people. And Jesus basically responds, oh yeah? Well, I know you. In fact, I know what you're thinking right now. Let me show you. And he says this. Jesus answered him. It says, answered him. The guy didn't speak, right? He's answering his thoughts. Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to tell you. Tell me, teacher, he said. Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii, which is just the amount of money back then, and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he canceled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt canceled. You have judged correctly, Jesus said. Then he turned toward the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? Which, pause there, that's funny, right? I imagine Simon's like, yeah, I noticed her. We've all seen this woman. Like, it's kind of hard to miss, right? He says, do you see this woman? And he says, and he starts pointing out some things that hosts often did for their guests. He says, I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has been forgiven little loves little. Then Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. The other guests, Pharisees, people on the porch, began to say among themselves, who is this who even forgives sins? And the reason, by the way, they're asking this question is because they knew only God can forgive sins, right? I can forgive a sin that you committed against me, but only God can forgive anyone and everyone's sins, and that's what he's doing here. And so Jesus is just reasserting his claim that he is God. And then Jesus speaks, verse 50, Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. Wow. You read this, and you just got to ask, why did this woman come and do this? And Jesus kind of tells us, he says, it's because she had been forgiven much. And so she can't help but express her gratitude. Apparently, this woman, maybe earlier that day or the day before, Jesus was kind of traveling around from town to town, but earlier that day, perhaps, or the day before, she had met Jesus or heard Jesus speak. She maybe had heard Jesus teach a sermon, and somehow her response led her to this night. And thinking about that, it just makes me curious. What did she hear Jesus say? What is it that she heard Jesus teach that led her to this? Well, Luke, who's writing this story, who's written this biography of Jesus' life, he doesn't tell us what Jesus taught earlier that day in that town. But we might be able to figure it out. Earlier in this chapter, Luke does tell us that earlier that same day, some of a guy named John the Baptist's disciples, John the Baptist was a spiritual leader, his disciples were kind of his apprentices, that they had shown up in the same town and had asked Jesus, hey, John the Baptist wants to know, are you really the Messiah, the Savior, or is there someone else? And so that happened that same day. Well, there are three other biographies of Jesus in the Bible. One of them is named Matthew. The guy who wrote it is, anybody want to guess his name? Matthew. The guy who wrote Luke, anybody want to guess? Luke. They were not very creative in their titling. And so this guy Matthew also wrote a biography of Jesus, and Matthew also includes this story about the day when John the Baptist's disciples show up and say, hey, are you the one, or should we be looking for somebody else? But Matthew also includes what Jesus was teaching on that day when John the Baptist's disciples showed up, which is the same day as this woman later shows up that night at the dinner party. And so we can take a pretty good guess at what she heard Jesus say. And so I want you to picture this. Jesus has come to her town. Jesus is out teaching. That's what he did. And crowds gather around to hear him. That's what would happen. My guess is this woman probably kind of stood in the back of the crowd. And everyone
despised her. She was always uninvited, and so she didn't want to be noticed. She didn't want to become a focal point, so she probably stood in the back of the crowd and listens to Jesus, who she'd met a lot of men. It's what she did for her profession, but she realized, I've never met a man like this. And so she's listening to Jesus teach, and here's what he taught that particular day. He said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." Can you imagine how those words sounded to her? I mean, who knows how she had gotten to where she was in life? What had happened to her? The vast majority of women in the sex industry today were abused as children, often sexually abused. Maybe that was her. I don't know. But I do know that she had grown up into a life of condemnation. She was condemned by others, and I would guess even condemned herself. I mean, I don't think she grew up dreaming of becoming a prostitute, right? Little girls don't grow up dreaming of that. No one grows up planning on being ashamed of themselves, of what they do. They just end up there. And she had. And she thought it would always be that way. And this was her life, and there was no chance at it ever changing. She would always be uninvited. She would always be unwanted. She would always be undesirable, except for by the men who liked to use her. I mean, who could ever help her out of this life? The only response she ever got from anyone was condemnation, and that didn't change her. You know, pointing out her sins did not lead her away from her sins. Shame did not set her free. And so she thought, this is my life, and this will always be my life. But here's Jesus, who says he's God, and he says, "Come to me. If you are burdened, if you are weary, be yoked to me." Some of you are like, what's the deal with the yoke? Are we talking egg yolks? Egg yolks? Here's the deal with the yoke. A yoke back then was an instrument, a piece of wood that would be put on two animals. And it was put on those two animals so that they could walk together in unison as they worked, like plowing a field. And so what Jesus is saying when he says, "Come to me, be yoked to me," is he's saying, I want to have a connected relationship with you. I want to walk through life with you. I am gentle and humble in heart. I won't condemn you. I'm offering you forgiveness, and I can set you free. You are not defined by your sin. You are not captive to your sin. You can be free. I can give your soul what your soul is looking for, which is rest. I can give you a new life. And in that moment, as she stood in the back of that crowd, she realized that it didn't matter who she was. And it didn't matter what she had done. It didn't matter what anyone else thought of her, because that man claims to be God, and he's for me. God is for me. And she said yes. She accepted the forgiveness he was offering. She said, "I want that relationship that you're offering." And so later that day, she hears that Jesus was a dinner guest at Simon the Pharisee's house. And so she grabs the most valuable treasure she owns. And she heads across town. And she walks up on that porch. And she walks in. And she breaks that jar. Perhaps symbolizing that her life, which is truly any person's most valuable possession, had been broken, but was now being put back together and made whole by this man, Jesus. And Jesus explains to Simon the Pharisee that the reason she did this is because of gratitude, because she had been forgiven much. And Jesus makes the point that Simon, who falsely feels superior, who falsely considers himself sinless, well, he doesn't feel the need to be forgiven. And so he could never understand an extravagant act of love like this. And to make sure that no one misses the point, not the Pharisees, not the people on the porch, Jesus turns to this woman and he smiles a reassuring smile at her and he says, your sins are forgiven. Your faith has saved you. Go in peace. That's a moment because only God can forgive sins. And so right here in front of everybody, Jesus is again reasserting the fact that he claims to be God. And so can you imagine what's going on in people's minds as they hear all this? I mean, out on the porch, shockwaves are going through the crowd because inside that house is a prostitute and a bunch of Pharisees. And Jesus just made it very clear that he is for the prostitute, that God is not for the Pharisees, but is for the prostitute. And in the house was this prostitute, broken pieces of her alabaster jar all over the floor around her, not being able to stop crying, using her hair as a ShamWow to dry Jesus' feet. And what she's hearing is that her broken life is being made whole. Jesus is offering her a new life, a new life of peace, a new life without condemnation, a new life of peace with other people who all witness this happen, a new life of peace within herself, and most importantly, a new life of peace with God. And it is a beautiful story. But more importantly for you and me, it's also a relevant story. It's a story that's relevant to my life and to yours. Now, you may question that because you might be thinking, but I, Vince, am not a prostitute. Or are you? There's another story in the Old Testament of the Bible about this guy named Hosea. And Hosea was a godly man. I mean, he really loved God. And he was a good man. Hosea was single, and as many single people do, my guess is that Hosea prayed and hoped for this perfect woman he would meet someday to be his wife. Well, one day, something unusual happens. God actually speaks to Hosea. I know that's weird, but it happens from time to time in the Bible. And God speaks to Hosea, and he tells Hosea that he has picked a woman for him. Probably took Hosea's breath away, like this is the moment, right? He's been waiting for it. And then God informs Hosea that her name is Gomer. And it gets worse. Gomer is a prostitute. Hosea, this godly man who's been praying for the perfect woman, can't understand. He's confused. He's angry. He doesn't know what to do, but he has committed his life to following God and obeying whatever God has for him, and so he reluctantly agrees. He drives down to the red light district. He met with Gomer's pimp. He paid money to buy Gomer out of prostitution, and he brings her home to be his wife. Well, to Hosea's surprise, things actually go pretty well. Like they start to build this life together, and Hosea actually falls in love with this woman that God gave him. Things are going really well until this one day when Gomer disappears. She's gone, and Hosea can't understand until finally he learns that Gomer has gone back to the red light district where she is turning tricks again. He's devastated. He's heartbroken. He can't understand. What could those other men possibly offer her that I haven't given her. He's angry. He's angry at God, what you did to me. And so he questions God. He kind of shakes his fist and he says, why, God? What am I supposed to do now, God? And God speaks to him again. God says, here's what you're to do. Go back to the red light district. Go back to her pimp. Pay again to buy her out of prostitution and bring her home to be your wife again. Hosea, as you might imagine, is confused. And so he asks God, he says, why? And God answers. God says, because that's how I love you. Because that's how I love you. See, God has Hosea serve as a living object lesson. Hosea representing God and Gomer representing, well, us. And the idea of the story is that we're the prostitutes. That every single one of us has turned our back on God multiple times and sought love that only He can give us in all kinds of other places. And so the lesson is that even if you've turned away from God, even if you've done so repeatedly, even if you're far from perfect, that's okay because God's love is perfect. Even if you've been against God, God is still for you, and so you are invited. Now, what I found is that there are some people who can hear that and it makes sense to them. And they're able to accept and embrace God's love for them. They realize they're imperfect, but God's love is perfect and they can embrace that. But there are other people who really struggle to believe that God could love them, that a perfect God could love someone like them. And I'll just say that I am one of those people. And what I think is, I think the people who really struggle, who find it almost impossible to believe that God could love them, I think that for a lot of us, it's because the people in our life who are supposed to love us didn't do such a great job of loving us. And it led us to a place where we felt, maybe still feel, unlovable. So I grew up with an abusive father. He was extremely emotionally and verbally abusive, occasionally physically abusive. My childhood was just filled with bad moments. One of them came when I was 7 years old. I was asleep in the middle of the night. My dad shook me, woke me up. I said, what's going on? He said, we're moving. I said, we're moving? He said, we're moving right now. Get up. We're moving. And so we grabbed all our stuff. He had gotten a truck, and we threw it all in a truck, and we made a run for it. My father was trying to avoid some people and some things that were going to happen to him. And so my father and I drove the truck from New Jersey to our new place we're going to live in Florida. And my mother and sister drove our car, and they stopped on the way to visit some family. And so my father and I got there a couple days early. And the first night we got there, we checked into a hotel, and there was a restaurant right across the street. So we went to this restaurant, and my dad just kept talking to the waitress and talking to the waitress. And I didn't think anything of it. So we go over to the hotel, and we close the door, and my dad says, hey, I got to go out, and so you're going to be by yourself tonight. Don't worry. I'm going to lock the door. Don't open it for anyone. You know, I've got the key. And so I got to go out, but I'll be back in the morning. And he leaves. And so I'm 7 years old, sitting by myself in this hotel room, just trying to do the math and figure out why doesn't he love me? And I saw an ashtray on the dresser, and I took the ashtray. I brought it into the bathroom. I broke the ashtray in the bathtub, and tried to slit my wrist. That prostitute in Luke 7 broke her bottle of perfume because she finally felt loved, and I broke that ashtray because I thought I could never be. I wasn't successful in trying to harm myself that night. but really the harm was already done because I had come to a place in life where I felt like I could never be loved. And maybe a few of you resonate with that. Maybe you know what it's like to find it difficult or almost impossible to believe that you could be loved, especially by a perfect God. And how could a perfect God love an imperfect person like me? And if you do feel that way, I can just tell you that I understand that. And I think Gomer would understand that. In fact, I wonder if maybe the reason Gomer left Hosea and the love that he had for her and went back to prostitution is because somewhere deep in her heart, she could never really believe that Hosea could love someone like her. And I can also tell you that this woman we meet at the dinner party, she would understand that. She would understand what it feels like to believe that you could never be loved. But when she met Jesus, when she heard him speak, and it changed everything for her. And when I met Jesus, it has changed everything for me. And my prayer for you is that you will meet Jesus and that you will hear him speak, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy, and I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." Because it would change everything. You would understand that you are loved much and that you are forgiven much. And it would lead you to a place, I think, where you would love him much. And listen, just in case maybe you're new here and you're trying to figure out what is this church all about? What's this Verve thing all about? Well, here it is. Verve is a church for prostitutes. We started this church 3 years ago next month, and we started it to let people know that God is for them, especially people who might not assume that God is for them. And that includes me, and maybe that includes you, and probably that includes prostitutes. And so we're a church for everyone, including prostitutes. In fact, about a year ago, we threw a party for people, for women in the sex industry. And right now, we're working with a group to establish a new home called Refuge for Women here in Las Vegas that will help women in the sex industry who want to get out. And in fact, today, our offering, all the money in our offering buckets at the end of service, we're going to give to Refuge for Women to help them establish that home here in Las Vegas. And the reason is because God is for them. God is for the prostitutes, and that's really good news because it means that God is for me, and he's for you. At the beginning of the service, I told you how I was uninvited to Amy's first grade sleepover birthday party. She invited only one boy, and it was Tommy Gardner, not me. The crowd is still gasping in shock and disbelief. I wanted to be uninvited. I wanted in to the party. And so I wrote Amy a letter that day. The letter went kind of like this. It said, "Dear Amy, I heard about your party. I was talking to Tommy. He's glad you invited him, but feels weird because he was the only boy you invited. And, you know, being the only boy invited made him realize he'll be the only boy at the party because you only invited one boy to the party. Just thought you should know, Vince." And I gave it to Amy, and she scribbled something on the note and gave it back to me. And what she wrote was, "Okay, you're invited." Yes. The lesson is never underestimate the power of manipulation, especially on unsuspecting first grade girls with questionable moral character. So, listen, I just want to tell you this. The good news is that you don't need to manipulate God into wanting you. You don't need to convince him that you're acceptable. You don't have to beg him to invite you because you're already invited. You're already invited. All you have to do is realize that God is for you and is offering you love, forgiveness, relationship, and then say yes. And that's what our church is all about, and we'd love to help you with that. If you If you want to talk about that, if you have questions, we have people at the Velcro Bar, and I'll be back over here at the Velcro Bar after the service, or maybe just come back next week and keep exploring. And here's what we're going to do right now. We're just going to give you a couple of minutes. We're going to have the band do one more song, and you can just kind of sit and chill. And what I want to encourage you to do is think about how this service and this message applies to your life. We're, as a church, our goal is not to entertain you, but to help you to have a different life, a better life with God. And so the question we always ask people to wrestle with is, so what do I do with this? How does this apply to me and to my circumstances? And so I'd encourage you to do that. If you pray, you could spend this time praying. If you're like, man, I don't pray because I don't really think I believe in God right now. Man, I would encourage you maybe to say a prayer like this. God, I don't even know if you're up there, but if you are, prove it. Like if you are, I'd like to know it. And so would you make yourself real to me? Maybe you could do that and see if God doesn't respond to that sometime soon. So we're going to give you a couple minutes, band playing. If you'd like, we also make communion available during this time. You don't have to, but communion's on the tables on the outside of the room. And communion is a piece of bread and a cup of juice that is weird and beautiful at the same time. It represents Jesus' body and blood given on the cross for us. And that is kind of weird, right? But at the same time, it's kind of beautiful because it just helps us to remember that Jesus loves us so much. He is so for us that he gave up his life so that we might have life. And it's just a reminder of the sacrifice he was willing to make for us. So if you'd like to take communion, you can go and get the bread and juice, bring it back to your seat. And when you're ready, you can eat and drink. If you're not there spiritually, we understand. And you can just take this time to listen to the song and maybe think about your next step spiritually. So I'm going to pray for you, and then we'll give you a couple minutes, and we're just about done. God, I just want to thank you for your love and grace. You know, the thing with us is, the truth is we're not good enough. Some of us are trying, some of us don't care, but the truth is none of us could ever be good enough for a perfect God. And so thank you that you're a God of compassion, a God of grace, a God of unconditional love which means we don't need to be perfect because your love is. Thank you that Jesus came to show us that you are for all of us. You are for the rest of us. Thank you that he gave his life on a cross, just showing us the greatest sign of love that we could ever see. God, my prayer for myself and for everyone in this room is that we'd keep moving our lives closer to you and to your love, because I think that's what we're really seeking. And so, God, I pray that the result of today, of this service, is we take one more step in that direction of figuring out who are you and how do I do life with you and what can you do with my life? Because when we get there, you take our lives, which are often messy and maybe broken, and you make something really beautiful out of them. God, I pray that you do that in us. And I pray in Jesus' name, amen.